Hello. In recent audio clips, we've been talking about federalism and the Senate, which, as we've said, are two sides of the same coin. And we've been talking about how destructive those two things are in the American political system. We've been talking about the need to replace federalism and the Senate. As we shared before we can do that, we need to talk about how the legislative process has to be redone from the bottom up, so that when we put in a replacement for federalism, it's not going to end up making the problem worse than it is right now. So that's what we're going to talk about in this audio clip and in future audio clips, because I believe one clip will not be enough. But before we get into that, I just wanted to mention some recent news at the time of this recording. Recently, there was this headline about the Colorado Secretary of State, if I'm not mistaken, a woman who said that she was not going to allow the type of Arizona ballot audits to happen in her state. And she said that boldly. And she said that shortly after the Attorney General of this the current illegitimate administration had threatened to pursue legal action against the people doing the voting audits in Arizona, and we had shared that was in essence a dog whistle to people in the blue Democrat-run states to let them know, hey, you guys need to help us to make state laws in such a way that audits like that can never happen. This Colorado woman, this female dog, was able to hear the dog whistle, and she then reacted that way. So this headline was a validation of the point that we've been making, that these people know that they can hide under federalism and use federalism as a tool. And then while they use federalism as a tool, then they can use the federal government in whatever way they can to also seize more power. So they are chameleons. They shift and make use of whatever you make available to them. So federalism is not the solution. And I also wanted to point out very quickly that the January 6th commission, which was shot down by the filibuster in the Senate, which proved, quote, to conservatives that the filibuster works. And we shared that that's actually evidence of how the filibuster is really just a blocker of things getting done. And that if it weren't for for federalism in the Senate, we wouldn't be in the situation we're in, where the filibuster could come in to help us prevent the problem becoming worse. But any which way, even though the January 6th commission has been shot down to this day, there's still no effort that's being done by the Senate or anyone to really set up the commission that really needs to be set up to investigate who was... who authorized the letting in of certain people into the Capitol Hill building on January 6th? That included people from Antifa, which, as we shared before, should be called or is really called pro-DEMFA, pro-democratic fascism. And so there's proof that these people were being let in by the police. The doors were open for them to come in. None of that's being investigated. And Ashley Babbitt's murderer is still free. And no commission will ever come of that to investigate all of that because of the filibuster. Because the filibuster just blocks everything. And prevents any action that will really make a difference. And on top of that, think about it, we really need to redo the whole electoral system, and there's no chance, there's absolutely no chance that anything will ever get done with the filibuster system because there'd be a need for 60 solid Republicans to be there in order to forge all these bold actions that need to be done to end electoral fraud. So those conservatives who are still seeing all of this as proof that federalism works are still living in delusion. And there was a recent 50-50 standoff in the Senate. There was a filibuster going on a bill that had been passed by the House of Representatives that was going to change federal laws, change laws to make Democrat cheating easier. And it was stopped by the filibuster in the Senate. And again, conservatives see it as proof of federalism doing its job. But again, the real changes that need to be done to end the whole thing, because they are able to do, they were able to do the cheating. They just want to make it easier for themselves and make it permanent. But we cannot change the things that need to be changed to prevent them cheating in the future, while federalism and the filibuster is still in place. And conservatives, just because they believe in the status quo, cannot understand that reality. And it's angering to be dealing with people who are so stubborn and idiotic. So that aside, now that we've talked about that, let's start talking about what needs to be done to change the legislative process. So in a new constitution, we would need to have a single chamber, a single house, and we would get rid of the Senate. We wouldn't work under a concept of federalism. There's no state sovereignty. There's just government. And we just want good government that respects the rights of individuals at every level. That's what we want. And so now that we have a single house, no longer a House of Lords, a Senate, we'll just have one house. And let's call it, just to differentiate it from the current house, let's call it the House, the American House of Commons. And you would say, why are we calling it the House of Commons? It's not just borrowing the British name. It's also to make it different from the current house in name, and to emphasize that it's a house of common people who have been elected to represent the other common people and to do common people work. So we want to chop off the concept of elitism that people get when they go to Congress. They are just regular common people. And to constantly call them the House of Commons will reinforce that. So that's why it needs to be called, in my opinion, the House of Commons. So let's call it the House of Commons. And each member, we'll call them a member of Commons, an MC, member of Commons. And the MC, initials also, as you know, are used to speak of master of ceremonies. And a master of ceremonies, let's say in a big award show, is not a person getting the awards. He's just coordinating things or making it possible for other people to get their awards. And so it's fitting that these people be called MCs, in the sense that they're there to produce rewards for other people. In other words, the citizens of the country. So very fitting that they be called MCs, which literally will mean member of the commons. Every time we hear us saying MC, that's what that stands for. So we said that in the current system there are power clots, you know, places where power congregates in an unhealthy way, preventing the free flow of legislation, of ideas, and of freedom. And we focused last time on basically three big power clots in the American system. The Speaker of the House is a big power clot. And we talked about the committee system and the people who chair the committees. Those are big. That's another big layer of power clots. And we talked about the parties. The party system is a humongous power clot. And We'll not be talking in too much detail about how to how to dismantle the party system. And there are very simple things that we can do to dismantle the whole power structure of the party system. But we'll talk about that in more detail in another audio clip, hopefully. But suffice it to say for now that when people get elected to the House of Commons under this new system that we're talking about, they will no longer be identifying themselves as members of a given party. So it's not like a Democrat got elected to the House of Commons, or a Republican, or an Independent, or a Green Party person. There's not going to be any sort of designation. So there's the concept of who has the majority and who then can select committee chairmanships and all that. All of that concept is gone. There will be no counting of how many Democrats or Republicans or whatever are in the House of Commons, because once they get to the House, they will have no party affiliation. They will not identify themselves with any party. And there will be things in the Constitution that will prevent them surreptitiously falling back into that system. But we will talk about that later. But for now, think of all these members of the House of Commons as individuals who got elected with the help of different people along the way. But once they got elected, they're their own person, and they have no label, no party label on them, and no loyalty owed to any party or any DNC chairman or RNC chairman or whatever chairman. They will be their own person, and because there will be no speaker, then there's no one deciding what bill will be voted on, what bill gets to the floor, what bill gets debated on. But the question that is, well, if there's no one deciding these things, who has the power? There's no committee deciding what bill lives, what bill dies, what bill moves on, what bill gets to be buried in the cemetery of broken dreams. Since there's no one doing that, the question is, how do we get things done? Now, to get things done, what will happen is that every MC will be able to submit their own bill. Anyone. It doesn't matter who they are. They can go and type up their own bill and submit it. So that bill, when they decide to submit a bill, it will go into what we will be calling a favoriting pool. And I hope that the explanation will clarify the meaning of that phrase. So any MC will sit down, and he or she can write a bill and then submit it to the favoriting pool. So when it goes into the favoriting pool, what will happen is that other member of the House of Commons will be able to see that bill in the pool of favorites. And they will be able to look at it and say, oh, I like this bill. This bill seems promising. And if they like it, they favorite it. They give it a thumbs up, let's say. And the more thumbs up a bill has, the more chances it has of moving on to the next stage. But that thumbs up or that favorite label that will be placed on the bill is non-committal. It doesn't mean that the person giving the thumbs up is saying, I want this to be the law of the land. It's just saying, I like it, and it deserves to be worked on and voted on. And the thing is, because we'll probably have the same number or similar number of people in the House, let's say right now it's, I believe, 435. Let's say it's the same number, or maybe it's 535. If we add the 100, it would have been senators, and now they become common people in the House of Commons. But let's say it's around a number between 400 and 500. So we have this big pool of people writing legislation for the entire country, and at the national level. And because there are so many people, and so many bills that will come up, then each MC will be obligated to run around the halls of Congress, of that House of Commons, promoting their bill. You know, just like they go around, you know, kissing babies and shaking hands and doing all these things to win the election, they will be doing the same thing to proselytize their own bill to their fellow MCs. And so they will be going around saying, "Hey, did you look at the bill I added to the pool yesterday? And do you like it?" So they'll be able to be talking about it and evangelize. You know, use that quality that they use to win elections to now promote ideas and have a nice discussion. So then they can talk to a certain MC and say, "Hey, did you like the bill?" And the other guy will say, "No, I liked it, but I didn't like what you said in this paragraph, and what are you talking about?" And that's how the bill will start kind of taking life. Now, if the bill reaches, I'm going to be giving numbers throughout this clip and future audio clips, and these numbers can be debated. So these are not etched in stone, but these are just to give an idea. Let's say that when the bill reaches more than a third of favorable votes, in other words, if the House has 435 members, a third of that would be 145, I believe. So the moment that a given bill reaches 145 thumbs up or favoritings, then it goes to the next stage, and the next stage is the voting queue, we can call it. So the bill is then up for vote. It will go to the floor and be voted on. And in what order will it be? Will the bills be voted on? Any bill that gets to the voting queue will move up to the top if it has more thumbs up than any other bill. So the bills with the most thumbs up go to the top, and if there's a tie, whichever bill made it to the queue, to that voting queue first, will have precedence. First in, first out. So that's how. So there's no speaker who decides what bill gets voted on. In a democratic way, in a natural dynamic way, the better bills, or the bills that have a better chance of being voted on, that are most popular, will rise to the top and get a chance to be either voted up or down. And this time, if a person, say, voted, gave it a thumbs up at the beginning when it was in the poll, and then it gets up to the voting on the floor, and then he or she has a change of mind or something happened to the bill that they didn't like, then they can say, "No, I'll vote it down." But whatever they decide to do at that moment, that is a final vote, as opposed to the thumbs up, which was just a way of saying, "I like the bill." So while it's going on the way to a third of thumbs up, any MC can put a bill that's in the poll on hold. As if to say, "Hey, I don't want it to be voted on yet, because I've been talking to my fellow MCs, and they have certain ideas, and they've been saying we're not going to vote for it unless you change this or that or the other." So they can say, "Hey, I'm putting the bill on hold." And so they can put that tag, and then that bill can continue to accumulate thumbs up, but it will, even if it has 400 thumbs up, it will not be allowed into the voting queue because the MC who sponsored it said, "I'm putting it on hold." So he can do amendments to it. And let's say that if he does an amendment, a change to the bill, and resubmits it, then the MCs who gave it a thumbs up will have a chance to be notified that the bill that they favorited has changed, so that they can look at it, and they will probably have 1 or 2 days, let's say, to change their mind. So if they don't do anything, that thumbs up stays, but they can then give it a thumbs down if they find out that the bill changed. Now, if they find out that the bill changed until it gets to the floor, then they still have a chance to repent of their thumbs up, you could say, by voting it down on the floor. And as you can see, a lot of this sounds very doable with the current technology, you know, with computers. So all of this idea of putting a bill into a pool, so that people can see it, and you know, there's going to be an internet, some website where the MCs can all view these bills. And also, it's important that all of this be as public as possible, that any member of the public can go to a website and look at all the bills in the favoriting pool, and then in the voting queue, they can see how many thumbs up a bill has while it's in the pool, and they can see who sponsored it and who gave it a thumbs up, and so forth. And all of this should be very, very transparent, very public. And you would say, well, all of this is very doable now with the current technology, but what about, you know, like 200 years ago when the founding fathers got started? And please bear in mind that a lot of these things might be a little more difficult to do by hand, but a lot of it, if not most of it, is very doable, would have been very doable 200 years ago if there had been a will to do it. So do bear that in mind. And also another thing is, as we're talking about all these things, you're saying, oh, why are we talking about all these weird ideas, and what good is it to listen and think about these things? Well, you have to remember that even though we're talking about legislative processes and we're talking about laws and things like that, that everything we're saying is related to truth, to concepts of truth. And they have an application not only in the political level, but at every other level. And if you're listening carefully with an open heart, you will see that a lot of these things that we're talking about transcend the political realm and go into other areas of human interaction. And it's also important that the more truth is exposed, and whenever we try to forge an environment where truth prevails and where freedom where freedom abounds, then greater truths become available that transcend the areas where there was truth originally. So when you create an environment of truth and freedom begin to multiply and reach other areas. And I hope that you're hearing what I'm trying to say with this. And this is part of why we're releasing these audio clips. Because if you think about it, every place where there's been freedom, a certain level of freedom and a certain level of abiding by truth will seize a manifestation of greater truths at the spiritual level, at the economic level, at the scientific level, etc. You cannot see real growth, let's say scientifically, in places where there's no freedom. So when we start creating an environment of freedom, talking about things that promote freedom, that will automatically manifest itself in other areas of the human existence. So that's why we're talking about all these things. So, we've been talking about an MC being able to put a bill on hold and being able to amend it, and then the people who gave it a thumbs up will be able to look at the bill again and say, oh, I like it, and leave the thumbs up, or say, no, I don't like it anymore, and withdraw their thumbs up. I'm sorry. And a bill can only, let's say, be 4 months in the poll before it can make it to the floor. So in other words, a bill cannot linger in the pool forever. If the bill was submitted at a given date, if it hasn't come out of the pool within a four-month period, then the bill at that moment dies. And it's a way to kind of clean the pool out and have the bills that really didn't get any traction be withdrawn, so that the MCs don't have to look through 5 million bills in the pool. And why would you want to withdraw the bill if you're an MC? Well, because in this new constitutional system, there's going to be this kind of restriction. And again, this is just a suggestion. I mean, the number that an MC can only have, let's say, 10 failed bills per year. What does failed mean? Failed means that it died after 4 months in the pool. you know, before it could be voted on, or that it made it to the floor, you know, and it was voted on, and then it simply died in the sense that it was voted down. So that is a failure, a definition of failure. And an MC can only have let's say up to 10 failures, bills that failed. And after that, he or she can no longer submit more bills. So it's there has to be a certain number that has to be put there so that MCs are not just writing bills willy-nilly because they have nothing to lose. So they just submit all this rubbish to the pool that is of no use. If they're submitting rubbish, if they submit rubbish 10 times, then they will not be able to submit anything anymore. So they'll just have to be passive voters from then on. And it will be reflected on their record when some a citizen goes online and sees what's going on in the House of Commons. They will see, oh, so-and-so, he can no longer submit any bills. My representative can no longer submit any bills because he's been submitting failed bills. He already submitted 10 failed bills in the year. And maybe 10 is a little too high, but we need a certain way of restricting the MC so that they, when they submit a bill, they have to do it knowing, okay, this guy has a chance of surviving and making it through. And to avoid a failure, an MC can voluntarily withdraw a bill after, let's say, 5 days, unless it has been voted on, unless it, you know, made it so quickly to the voting floor and got voted on, you know, within 5 days, and, you know, by then, you know, he cannot withdraw it. But if he put a bill in, he can just say, oh, I'm sorry, you know, maybe he submitted the bill, put it in the pool, went around the halls of the House of Commons promoting the bill, and he realized, hey, everybody hates these ideas, so then he can come back to his office and withdraw the bill from the pool, and it will not count as a failure. So there has to be a certain flexibility so that people can kind of like test the waters, send out trial balloons without feeling that they're going to get punished. So we want MCs who are constantly thinking ideas and have the freedom to put them out there and have them have those ideas flourish if they're good, and, you know, without the fear that they will be punished if the idea is not perfect. And also, the bill can be authored by a single MC or a group of MCs, and I personally believe that there should be a limit on the number of people who sponsor or author a bill. I would say a limit of 7, so that it, you know, it doesn't get crazy. So if let's say 3 people put their name on the bill, maybe because they're collaborating between the 3 writing out the bill or whatever, or they want to share responsibility or credit on the bill for X or Y reason, then if the bill fails, each of the 3 in this example would share the failure. So they would all get a third of a failure. So it's not like they're not going to get 3 failures, 1 each, but it's going to be 1 failure split amongst 3. So the 1/3 will be added to their total of failed bills for the year. I don't know if that makes sense. But shared authorship is a way of sharing credit. If the bill is successful, you know, and is liked by people and everything, they can say, hey, I was part of that bill. So it's a way of sharing credit, but it's also a way of sharing responsibility if the bill doesn't make it through. So when a bill is in the process of being improved whilst it's in the pool, you know, there are going to be negotiations. So MC A Alpha, let's say, is going to be talking to MC Beta, and they're going to be discussing the bill, and Beta might say, hey, I'm going to give it a thumbs up, but only if you add this idea, or if you add this thing that's going to be a little bit favorable to my state. So, MC Alpha is going to say, okay, you know, I'm going to add that. So he'll go back to his office, add that to the bill, and, you know, and repost that same bill. But that negotiation that happened constitutionally it should be required to be recorded somewhere. So so every negotiation must be recorded, and it must be part of the addendum to the bill. So you know, the bill will have whatever it needs to have, in terms of the law it's trying to promote. But the bill will have this addendum of things related to the bill that are not part of the bill itself. And in that addendum, is going to be there should be a list of negotiations that the author of this bill added such and such thing to the bill because, and they should name names, MC Beta wanted this here. And this is a very difficult thing to enforce, because how do you know who said what to whom? You know, they go they go into an office and bring down the cone of silence, and they're talking to each other. Who knows, what they said to each other and what they agreed on. So this will be very difficult to enforce, but the fact that it's written is very important. And that if someone doesn't do this, if they don't write out what's being negotiated, the Constitution should lay out a penalty, a clear penalty for not writing out the negotiation. It could be a mixture of financial penalty, a fine that the MCs have to pay, or it could be suspension for a given amount of time. They can't vote for 7 days or something like that, or they can't submit any bills for 14 days. So there has to be some sort of punishment, and it will be made public. These MCs negotiated something, we found out about it, and they didn't put it in the bill, and we're going to punish them that way, and everybody will be able to see that punishment posted somewhere on some website. And the fact that there's a clear punishment, a clear set of rules, because that's one thing that the current Constitution lacks. Clear rules. You do this, then this happens to you. You don't do this, this will happen to you. The fact that there's going to be that rule is going to make it more difficult for MCs to violate the rule, because they will never know if they're negotiating and someone's listening and they're not aware of it. So this cloud of judgment is going to be hanging over their heads, and that will kind of get them to be more transparent about what's being negotiated amongst themselves as they are writing out the bills. And they can also work to consolidate similar bills. And I'm not too clear exactly on how the procedure would be, but there should be some sort of motion where if two people submit similar bills and they realize, hey, you have some ideas similar to mine, so we could combine our bills into one. And so there should be some sort of motion that would allow the bills to be combined without officially withdrawing them and causing a failure in the records of the two MCs involved. But there should be a way for bills to be merged in case that there are similarities to avoid common bills being out there voted on unnecessarily. And also, if a bill is radically rewritten, if an MC submits a bill and he keeps changing and changing things, by the Constitution should force the MC to basically indicate that the bill is radically changed. And by declaring it radically changed, all the favorite votes, all the thumbs up will have to be cleared. And once they're cleared, then it's like restarting the bill. And the important thing is that the authors must be frank about the changing of the bills to avoid, bait and switch, where they promote a bill, get it favorited so that it can be voted on, but by the time it gets to the floor, then it's a completely different bill. So they lied to get the bill to the floor. So that they put everything that they knew people would like, so the other MCs would like, and then as it got closer and closer to the floor to be voted on, to get to the voting queue, they do a swap, a complete rewriting of the bill. That sort of action should be considered unethical and have a punishment, a severe punishment written out very clearly in the Constitution. Again, could be a fine, could be a suspension of some type, or the inability to submit bills for a given period of time. And so I believe we've already said a lot of things in this clip. Let's say a few more things to end it. So once the bill is on the floor for voting, MCs can request, let's say, up to 15 minutes to debate on it. And they can yield their time or transfer it to someone else. So, you know, when the bill is up for voting, MCs can say, I want to go and talk. And it will be first in, first out. And they will be allowed to talk for up to 15 minutes. And there should be like some maximum debate time of 1 hour, let's say, for the whole bill. And I believe that the MC should have a total of, I did some numbers, and again, these numbers can change. These are just to give an idea. A total of, each MC should have a total maximum of 2 1/3, let's say 140 minutes, 2 1/3 hours of debate per year. That's all they have, 2 hours of debate for all bills for the whole year. And the reason for that number is that that adds up to if you add up 2 1/3 hours for all the MCs, let's say there are 435, that amounts to more or less 4 hours of debate per day, 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year. So I think that's more than enough time. And considering that they can talk behind the scenes without having to debate on a public floor the way you had to do 200 years ago, and now there's the internet and emails and things like that, maybe this debate time might not even be that important anymore. But it should be available, and there should be some system that regulates, okay, the MC has been has used up 1.5 hours of debate this year, so he only has 50 minutes left of time. And that should be controlled, and it should be made public. Every citizen should be able to go and see, hey, my representative, my MC has been talking. He's only spoken for 5 minutes all year, and they can take that any way they want, whether that be good or bad. Maybe that number might be irrelevant, I don't know, because there might be more important things to think about when evaluating an MC. But the thing is that, so MCs can debate, there's going to be a control. And see, all of this is without the need for a speaker. This can be automated. There's no one deciding who can speak. It's always first come, first serve. And because the debate does not have to be on the floor, you know, people can post comments online in real time. Like they can look at the bill, an MC, and go and say, hey, this is my opinion of the bill. And other people can see it, you know, especially nowadays with the technology, it's going to be very easy. There's no need for any speaker of the house controlling that. So that can go on with a lot of fluidity. And people can vote before the debate is over and change their vote in the middle of it. So they say, okay, I like this. So I'm going to vote it up. I'm going to vote for the bill. And then someone else gets up on the floor and says something, and it kind of awakens them. And said, no. So I changed my mind, and they can go and vote, change their yay to nay, or vice versa. But once the vote, the bill gets 50% plus one votes in favor, then it's over. Then no one can change their mind, and the bill has passed. And there is one thing. If an MC starts speaking gibberish, unrelated to the bill, he gets up and starts talking gibberish, that person should be kicked off the floor and penalized. And then we can see that there will be a need for a certain person doing that, kind of similar to what the Speaker of the House of Commons in Britain does, but in a more subtle way. And we'll be talking about that person in the next audio clip. We'll be calling him the HR, and there's a reason for that, and we will not explain that too much right now, but there's going to be a person who's going to be listening And that's going to be his job. And he's going to be very apolitical, just a person standing there objectively looking at things, hired for that alone and other little things. And he or she will look, listen to the guy and say, hey, you're talking nonsense. You're wasting our time, because some people could use the debate as a way, debate time as a way to prevent other people speaking. So they take time on to go on the floor, and they want to prevent someone getting to the floor to say something because they are afraid that that person might convince everybody else. So they kind of take up their time by speaking gibberish and just, you know, opening up the phone book, if those things still exist, and reading out, you know, alphabetically all the names. If someone starts doing that, then there's going to be an HR, a person that's going to be there, say, hey, that's nonsense, and yeah, you know, hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more. And that person will have that control, but that person has to be sure to do that, not because he disagrees with the ideas that are being said, but because whatever is being said is not related to the topic being discussed. And that should be the only reason. And if the person kicks somebody off the floor because they didn't like the ideas, then that HR under the Constitution should be penalized, because he cannot be political in any way. Or it cannot be because of some artificial imposition of political correctness. Oh, he used the word redskin. Oh, you know, let's kick him off the floor. That sort of kind of ambiguous, subjective stuff should not be allowed at all. We've kind of begun to give an idea of how a different legislative process could be run without the need for this controlling power clot of a speaker and committees clogging up the system. And I hope that you've noticed how free the system is, and how people are forced to work to, you know, produce ideas. And we're going to say some additional things that I think will shock some of you, but I think that if you hear them out, you'll see that they are good ideas that will help to regenerate the process. And once we clean out the process, then we can do some other things and then get rid of federalism forever and ever. So thank you very much. And we'll talk about this in a future, all of this additional things in future audio clips. Thank you.